Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello there from Bedford, the Bitcoin capital of the world. How are you all? Are you having a good week? Are you looking forward to the weekend? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by the Mighty Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today I've got an interview with Jimmy Song. But before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors, and as ever, do make sure you check them out. It is the sponsors that make it possible for me to do all these interviews. So first up, we have the amazing Dropbit, the best mobile wallet in the space, and they have absolutely killed it in 2019. Come on, have you downloaded the app yet? Tens of thousands have. Have you tried it out yet? They have crushed it this year. When I first started working with them, they were telling me, yeah, we've got this amazing mobile app. It's like Venmo for Bitcoin, and you can text Bitcoin to each other. And since then, they've added the ability to tweet Bitcoin. They've added very, very cool Lightning support. They've got Betch32 addresses, and they are working on so many cool things for next year. Seriously, check it out. Don't be a fucking loser. Download Dropbit, and if you want me to unlock your Lightning wallet, then hit me up on Twitter. Every few days, I go through them. I go through the DMs, and I send people some sats. It is available for the iPhone and Android. Just head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. And next up, we have Wire. Thank you to everyone who's checked them out. I caught up with Dunny recently. He told me how the campaign's been going, and it's been pretty successful. So thank you so much. But this is their last month sponsoring the podcast, and I want to make sure they get the most out of it as possible. So please do go and check out Wire. By checking out Wire, you are also helping the show. Now, they have been helping companies across the Bitcoin space onboarding users. So whether you are a solo developer or you've got a large team, if you are looking to simplify user onboarding and if you want to offer your users a fast and easy way to purchase Bitcoin, then Wire are the team to talk to. They've been crushing it since 2013. They take care of all the bullshit, the compliance, the payments, the liquidity. They do that all for you so you can focus on building your core offering. If you've got an idea for the next killer app, do not let those regulators kill it. If you want to find out more, reach out to Wire or create a developer account at sendwire.com, which is sendwire.com. I'd also like to welcome a new sponsor for December, Scott Orford and his company Crypto Mining Tools. Scott is a Bitcoin miner consultant, and I want you to check out his Bitcoin mining profitability calculator. It is available at cryptomining.tools. You can enter your estimated uptime to get realistic profit projections. It also includes the impact of the Bitcoin block reward halving, which is coming next year. If you're wondering which miner is the most efficient or has the best chance of breaking even, then you need to try out their interactive hardware comparison chart as well. As an ASIC mining equipment broker, Scott helps you make data-backed business decisions. He can help you find hosting or raw power and land to get your miners up and hashing out. I've known Scott for over a year now, and I've regularly discussed mining with him, and I consider him one of the foremost independent experts on the subject. I trust the guy, so if you are interested in this, make sure you get in touch with Scott. He's available on Telegram or Twitter at OfferedScott, which is OfferedScott, or visit cryptomining.tools, which is CrypToMining.tools. That's .tools, .tools. Okay, so on to today's show with Jimmy Song, and yes, this is going to wind some people up. Sorry in advance, but Jimmy has been on the show a couple of times before, and the last time he was on, when I was out in Oslo actually and we recorded it, we discussed the blockchain myth and why arguably there isn't a single use for blockchain outside of Bitcoin. So whilst I was out in Austin, I caught up with Jimmy to carry on the theme and to follow up from his latest article on altcoin valuations, which is up on Medium. It's probably worth reading. You know, as someone who has a heavy leaning to Bitcoin, I'm always curious why there is so much division, why we have a group of people who firmly believe that Bitcoin is king and is the only use for a blockchain and everything else is a scam, and then another group of people which firmly believe there are multiple uses for this technology. So I try and be as objective as possible in this interview, and we get into why Jimmy thinks all altcoins are doomed to fail, what sets Bitcoin apart from them, and why many don't find their temporary success from a technical merit or solid use cases, but from good marketing. Just a note also, it turns out my microphone had broken before this interview. The sound test at the start was fine, but when I was reviewing the sound afterwards, there was like a tinny sound to it. Now my engineer Danny's done the best to clear it up, but just be aware of that. Anyway, if you've got any feedback, you know you can reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And also, just a couple of notes. I'm off to South America on Tuesday. I'm going to be heading out to La BitConf in Uruguay. Can't wait to get to that. Never been to South America before, so this is pretty exciting. After that, I'm going to be heading to Bolivia for a couple of days, and then I'm going to be in Argentina for a couple of days before I head back to the UK and take some time off for Christmas. It would be great to see some of you while I'm out traveling. And also, if you've got any questions, feel free to hit me up. Again, my email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Morning, Jimmy. Morning.
Morning.
Or howdy. I should have my hat.
Yeah, I know. You bought it from me and everything.
It's actually still in my car. My daughter keeps wearing it.
Where does she live again?
And I'm not telling you. You're going to come steal it back. I was like, you've got to be careful with that. That's a $1,500 hat. $1,500. It's a Stetson, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
Should have brought it. Fuck, I didn't even think. What a moron. Yeah. Anyway, hello. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again.
Is this third time?
I think so, yeah.
Right, so we're going to kill the hopes and dreams of shitcoin investors.
Well, let's see if we can. That would be delightful for me.
Are we going to be objective, or are we everything's a scam?
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you what I think about everything with respect to altcoins and give you some of the history and all that stuff. But, yeah.
So you wrote a Medium piece. Mm-hmm. What was the trigger?
On altcoin valuation is the title. And the reason was I've been thinking about, like, what makes certain coins succeed where they don't. Because, I mean, some of them are clearly technically superior and other things, but they don't do as well. So, you know, what's the actual reasoning behind it? And the more I investigated, the more I realized, you know, like, short story, it's the marketing. That's the big thing.
Right, okay. Interesting. The marketing. I didn't think you were going to say that. So.
No. It's totally the marketing. And, you know, I trace the history of various altcoins and why certain ones succeed when they do.
Right, because I'm a marketing man. Mm-hmm. So I understand that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I don't mind the marketing as long as it's something of value and creating value. Mm. So this is a Bitcoin show. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm doing this show with you now is because if altcoins are a poor investment compared to Bitcoin, mm-hmm. I want the people listening to this to go, okay, I want them to reconsider it. Because, look, I get all the pressure of, like, oh, don't do any shit coins and blah, 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 which is fine. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there are people who listen to the show who invest in altcoins / shitcoins. So mm-hmm. if this helps educate people as why that's a really risky investment mm-hmm. compared to a less so risky Bitcoin investment, mm-hmm. I think this is a healthy thing to do. But let's be objective rather than everything's a scam. Because I think it's more useful to do that. Also, with regards, an interesting first question I have for you is, do you believe altcoins have a right to exist?
They have a right to exist. Right. Now, whether they provide value is another question entirely. And this is the thing about marketing that really gets me, is that you can market something that's completely useless and people might buy it. But depending on what utility that you say it has, if it doesn't, then eventually people will find out. But that said, like, there's stuff like Amway that's still going on and stuff like that. So it takes some time for the market to adjust and for people to understand why something's a scam or not really providing the value that it purported to do.
Right. So I just did a show about OneCoin. Mm-hmm. The ultimate crypto scam. There's a guy called Jamie Bartlett who did a BBC podcast documentary series called The Missing Crypto Queen. He was trying to find Ruja Ignatova, who was the creator. And OneCoin completely passed me by. Mm-hmm. I deserved it, and I kind of like, oh, I remember hearing about that. That's a Ponzi scam. And just mm-hmm. completely forgot it. Uh-huh. And we had a conversation, me and Jamie, about, you know, why is it did so well? And I said, I think it's because it missed... It was so far a scam, it missed everyone by. Mm-hmm. And what I decided to do, I try to categorize things in that there's Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Then there's genuine attempts to build something with a blockchain. And what I mean by that is I don't think the creators, whether they're misguided or not, mm-hmm. set out to scam people. I think they believed they are creating something with a blockchain that's useful. I would even put Ethereum into that bucket in that whether or not they've changed, I think the initial vision was to create something of value. I don't think it was, let's create Ethereum and just go and scam people out of billions. I don't think they thought it would happen. I then put in the blockchain scams where it's just a scam. 100% we're going to create a scam, mm-hmm. we're going to exit scam. And then there's the big Ponzi's, mm-hmm. like OneCoin and BitConnect. So I tried to grade them. I got some shitty feedback on that because mm-hmm. it's like, no, everything but Bitcoin's a scam. Mm-hmm. But I think that was a fair way to categorize
it. It's interesting how you categorize them because there are the outright Ponzi schemes where you literally have to put in money and you hope to recruit enough people that you can get paid back out of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, very much a pyramid scheme kind of structure. There are ones that are more very opportunistic, you know, creating an ICO during the 2017 bubble and, you know, raising, I don't know, $100,000 to, you know, a couple billion dollars yeah. and just like doing whatever with it. To people whose intentions may have been, you know, maybe a little more naive, but they thought that they were actually providing value and then finding out later that they didn't. I don't know if the difference of intent really makes a difference. Like like the Ponzi schemers, they're doing it knowing fully well that this can't possibly go on. Or I don't know, maybe they're super dumb and they think it can. I mean, it's possible that their intentions are, you know, pure and they're just really stupid. It's also possible that you have, you know, like people that are sincere about a particular coin, but whether they know it or not, ultimately they're scammy. And that's the big thing. They can't deliver on the promises that they make, which is it's going to be utilized for this particular use case. And if they aren't being utilized for that particular use case, or if it doesn't have the utility value that they purport, then it's a scam. It's you made a false promise and you didn't meet up to it. That's it.
Well, to be as objective as possible, mm-hmm. just out of fairness, plenty of people raise money to create businesses and mm-hmm. don't deliver on their promises and the businesses mm-hmm. fail. Mm-hmm. And I guess where I'm going is whilst I only have Bitcoin, only invest in Bitcoin, that's the only interest right now, like a massive disclaimer there, mm-hmm. I don't believe that it is 100% certain that Bitcoin will be the only blockchain forever mm-hmm. that will achieve something. I'm saying that it might happen. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to get at is I think for me it's an important separation of direct intention to scam mm-hmm. and then misguided and misleading people. They're just slight different for me.
Yeah, I get that. But usually the difference between those two, whether or not you intend to do it or not, is just a matter of ignorance. The people that are like less technical, they think, oh, well, we can make a blockchain do this because Don Tapscott in his book said so. It's like, you don't really understand what's going on. And I've written multiple articles about this, about how really blockchain is like this buzzword that people use to say we can solve whatever really complex problem, just throw blockchain at it. And then people actually believe them and then try to start companies and end up scamming a lot of people, like whether they know it or not. And in a sense, it's like whether or not they were ignorant of that fact before or after, you're still scamming people. And
okay. You know, was it you who said I think I saw you in a presentation or a panel saying sprinkling magical blockchain dust. Yeah, it was you.
Yeah, that was back with Consensus 2018.
Yeah,
and that was the panel with Joe Lubin. Yeah, that's the one.
You've got that fucking bet done yet?
Well, he's still being shifty about it. He wanted to change the terms after like we had more or less agreed to it. Like we did like earlier this year with Consensus. It was like the most watched CoinDesk live video the whole 2 days, and you know he wanted to change the terms like a few months ago. I'm like, no, like why would I change the terms? He wanted to make it like, you know, DAI focused, and if you're holding some DAI collateral, that counts as use even if you're not like actually transacting or anything. And it's like,
come on, Joe, stop being a pussy. Make the fucking bet. You're promising for ages, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I mean, he's just kind of a squirrely guy, and given the price of Ethereum and stuff, like, it's just not going to happen, I don't think.
By the way, before we get into it, did you know about the OneCoin scam?
I heard about it a while ago. I didn't really pay that much attention to it, other than that it was a scam. I mean, like,
do you know how much money went into it?
No. How much?
So it's a range.
Uh-huh.
It's at least $4 billion
uh-huh.
up to $15
billion. Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, that's why it's fucking mad. So that show's done so well because the amount of people listen to it, they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't realize it was that big. Yeah, up to 15
billion.
Okay,
so that's the valuation of what it was, or like actual cash that went in?
Actual cash that went in.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That is insanity.
Yeah, absolutely mad. Like, just mind-blowing the amount. It's worth listening to if you ever get time, that Jamie Bartlett thing. Mm-hmm. So, all right, anyway, so the altcoins. Well, so I deduce from what you said that basically everything else is a scam. Some may not have started out intentionally as a scam, but as soon as they realized, or the fact that they didn't have the right technical people explain it to them, it became scammy.
Yeah, most things. I mean, there's a few that I think I respect, at least technically. Okay. And I guess I would put them on the border, and I wouldn't necessarily call them scams, but I would say...
Can you tell me which you name names, the ones you...
Yeah, yeah. So I put that in my altcoin valuation article. Yeah. I think they have some technical innovation there that's worthwhile. Whether or not they're like all ethical or something, I don't know. But Zcash, Monero, Decred, and Grin, I think all have pretty strong cryptographers, pretty strong programmers. I've met a lot of those guys, and you know they're smart. I know that for a fact. But I mean, one of the things I point out in the article is that, you know, despite their technologies, almost all of them, like, they do way better than like some of these other things that are way above them, like stuff like Tron or Cardano, which like most of these things don't even have a product. But you know, the marketing that went into something like Tron or Cardano was insane versus something like, you know, Monero or Decred or something like that.
Well, Monero was the one I always felt like... When I interviewed Fluffy a while back, I said to him, I said, there's multi-coiners, Bitcoin maximalists, and then Bitcoin maximalists, but Monero's okay, kind of thing. Like, for a long while, I think that's kind of like died a little bit. A lot of people now have lost interest in Monero for various reasons, but it did have that mysterious creator. It didn't really have the marketing. It did seem to be trying to do something different. And when I spoke to Szabo, you know, Szabo himself, and I'm like, well, if Szabo says it's okay, then maybe.
Well, I don't know if it's okay. I mean, essentially, Monero was a clone of Bitcoin. Right, like, yeah. And in that sense, it's like, well, you didn't really add that much new. I mean, since then, they've added stuff like bulletproofs, and you know, did confidential transactions using ring signatures and stuff like that. Which, you know, I studied their code base, so I know it's good stuff. But even then, you had this like possible inflation bug that they had that they had to go and fix. You know, and I haven't looked at the code which examined their blockchain to see if that inflation bug actually created any new Monero. But stuff like that is just sort of inherent when you're hiding amounts, and this is kind of the problem with all of these altcoins that are trying to hide amounts, is that you run into the possibility that there may be an inflation bug. And if I had the exploit for an inflation bug, I would not tell anybody, and I would just continue to create as much and trickle it through, right? And if you, and this is my argument for why, like,
I don't think you would.
I mean, like, that's what you...
That's what a bad person would do.
Yeah, that's what somebody that wanted to make as much money as possible would do. I mean, there's, you know, rules of...
Responsible disclosure. I know you would do. I know if you found out Bitcoin, you would disclose it.
Yeah, but that's the idea, right? There's a lot of stuff like that, which...
I wouldn't.
Which, like, the orders of magnitude more kind of complicated as a result of trying to add new features. And, you know, this is sort of inherent in the whole thing. But, yeah, those are the four I would say are reasonable. I mean, I still don't understand why people, like, give Litecoin so much respect. Because, like, if you look at the history and what they actually did, and this is something that I point out in the article, back in 2011 when Litecoin started, it was basically like a clone of something called Fairbricks, which was also created by Charlie Lee. And Fairbricks was actually a clone of Tenebricks. And Tenebricks was something that was launched maybe like 10 days after Namecoin, which was the very first altcoin.
Okay.
So Tenebricks, and the big thing about Tenebricks was it used a different proof-of-work hashing algorithm, which is Script, which is what Litecoin uses. But the big thing was the creator pre-mined a bunch of coins for himself. And it was this guy. And so Charlie went in and said, okay, I'm going to make a fair version of this, no pre-mine. If that reminds you of like Z Classic or something, that's exactly what it was. And he created Fairbricks, didn't go anywhere. And one of the things I point out in the article is, well, why didn't it go anywhere? It's because he didn't have very good at marketing around Fairbricks. In fact, he pretty much took Fairbricks, rebranded it Litecoin, and launched it again. And that did much better because he had a really good slogan, silver to Bitcoin's gold, and he had a nice logo, he had a community around it, and he let everyone know. There were like at least like a dozen coins that launched around that time. Litecoin is pretty much, even Namecoin doesn't really exist anymore, right? Nobody develops on it or anything. Litecoin's pretty much the only one that's survived. And in large part, it's due to Charlie doing all of the marketing that he's done. And this isn't, Litecoin fanboys, please don't come after me. This is exactly what Charlie has said, right? He's admitted to pretty much everybody. He's given presentations saying, why did Litecoin succeed? Well, it's because of good marketing, right? Like it was, I had a really good slogan, a catchy name, nice base 58 address that starts with a capital L and everything else. That's what he said. And he even goes and talks about Fairbricks and stuff like that. So the fact that Litecoin has as much respect as it does, given that really there wasn't any innovation there, it was all taken from other sources. And similar thing with Monero, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's very similar to Bitcoin. And, Zcash, yeah, they came up with some new stuff and that in of itself. But like most Zcash is held in like just, it's a clone of Bitcoin. It's the shielded transactions take up a very small branch of it. Yeah, that to me tells me that a lot of the, first of all, there isn't enough technical understanding of what the heck's going on. And second, that it really is all marketing. And marketing material substitute for real knowledge of the technical underpinnings.
But has Bitcoin benefited from marketing? I mean, arguably it has it sometimes. Like Roger Ver did some stuff early on. Mm-hmm. And, word of mouth is a form of marketing. Mm-hmm. But it's a different kind of marketing. It's an authentic marketing.
Yeah, it's not centralized marketing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and the main piece of marketing in almost everything nowadays, every altcoin, is the white paper. That's your main piece of marketing. And, some of the white papers you read, oh my God, they have like zero technical detail and they promise you the moon, right? And at the same time tell you have no investor protection whatsoever. But I mean, that's essentially what white papers do. And it's like I've read some of these. Yeah. I've been paid to read some of these, and they don't make any sense whatsoever. And if you're technical at all, you can poke like 800 holes in them in like the span of 10 minutes. And the sad reality is that's what people use instead of looking at the underlying code oftentimes they don't even have the code, right? It's, we're going to launch this token. Like Ethereum was like this. They promised something and they said, okay, you know what? We're going to make this Turing-complete smart contract language platform.
World computer.
Yeah, world computer, code as law, proof of stake eventually, all that stuff. And they kept like none of the promises, and they were originally planning to launch at the end of 2014. They didn't. I think maybe there was like some testnet available mid 2015, but it didn't really get going until 2016. So, a lot of this stuff is really just marketing, and that's the thing that I don't think I fully realized. So I don't know if you know, but I kind of have a little bit of a history with Vitalik. Do you know about this?
No.
Okay.
Tell me.
All right. So I got into Bitcoin coding back in 2013. Yeah. So I was working on a project called Color Coins back then.
Is that like MasterCoin?
Kind of. So Color Coins was this idea that basically you can have assets riding on top of the Bitcoin chain. And as long as you had like rules, you can keep track of those. And right now, something like Liquid does that a lot better. And, does it on a side chain so you don't have to bloat the Bitcoin blockchain. But it was a really interesting idea. You can have other assets besides Bitcoin being tracked on the Bitcoin ledger, and it gets all of the security properties and so on. So I was working on this, and one of the – and, what you were talking about, MasterCoin, Counterparty, Ethereum, they were all sort of after the same mantle. The reason MasterCoin started was because of this guy, J.R. Willett, who was frustrated with the progress of Color Coins, and he decided to go and raise money to basically create Color Coins, and they called it MasterCoin. And that was a complete disaster. They had like these feature bounties and stuff like that. And, you know, they raised something like 5,000 Bitcoin, which at the time, I think it was like somewhere between $50 and $100 per Bitcoin. So it wasn't a small amount. Yeah. And they started like having bounties for certain types of features, saying, okay, give us a block explorer according to this spec and we'll give you the bounty and stuff. And that was a complete disaster. I mean, at one point, there were four different explorers, and they gave, like, different balances depending on the same address. So, I mean, it was, like, this is why you don't do, you know, development that way. You need to, like, care about the actual end result instead of just getting paid whatever bounty. That happened. Counterparty was a little different. It was kind of a reaction. But Ethereum also came as a result of that. But anyway, when I was part of the Color Coins project and stuff, one of the things we did was we asked somebody to write a white paper about Color Coins, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, you want some sort of spec and you want people to read why it's valuable and so on. So we asked this kid that we knew out of Canada that was kind of young, right? Like, and he was like, okay, we'll write it. And he wrote the white paper, except it wasn't anything like what we had written, like we had actually coded. So, like, what the heck? He said, well, you know, I think it should be this way, but, you know, that's not what we agreed to, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, he's like, well, you know, don't worry about it. I'm not really interested in this project. I'm thinking about launching my own coin anyway. And, of course, that guy was Vitalik Buterin, and the coin was Ethereum, and he launched it in early 2014 with that crowd sale.
So Ethereum is your fault. You fucking caused it, Jimmy.
No, he knew. Well, it's MasterCoins, but I didn't get into it until after the MasterCoin launch and everything else. And I didn't start coding in it until, like, I think it was October 2013 or whatever.
All right. Do you have a relationship with Vitalik now?
I mean, I say hi to him whenever I see him. Mm. It's not been that many times. He doesn't tend to go to the same conferences as I do.
I've never met him.
Yeah, I've met him like two or three times. But, I mean, we're cordial, but I still don't think he's right, right? Like, and the thing about Ethereum, when I heard about it, and I was in the weeds when this was all launching. You know, I read the white paper and everything, and it was just like, what, Turing, this is going to be like super complicated, and this is going to be like really hard to secure. And back then I wrote some articles, though, like, nobody read them back then because it was
still available.
I have them somewhere. Maybe I'll republish them.
Yeah, dig them out.
Yeah. But one of the things I wrote was, okay, this thing is just way too complicated. And, like, it's taken Bitcoin, like, at that time it was about, you know, 5 years old. So I was like, it's taken Bitcoin 5 years to just get the security up to where it is. And it's an order of magnitude less complicated. How the heck is this thing that's way more complicated going to get any security whatsoever? And, you know, and he was talking about, like, an 8-month development timeline for something this complicated. And I was like, there's no way he's going to hit, like, end of 2014. If anything, like, maybe 2015, probably 2016. And I think my timeline was roughly correct there. But that was my argument. And that's why, like, I had the opportunity to get 2,000 Ethereum per Bitcoin, right? That would have been an excellent investment in many ways. But, you know, at the time, I was like, there's no way this can work. It's way too complicated, and like, it's not going to have any security. The thing that I was mistaken, though, with is that I thought the technical stuff mattered. And the fact of the matter is, it didn't. It's
the marketing.
Yeah, it's the marketing. And one of the things I point out in that article is that Counterparty, which was one of the, like, ColorCoin's competitors or whatever, and really, like, during 2014, they came out and said, well, you know what? We've implemented all of the properties of the Solidity language. You can write any smart contract in Counterparty that you could in Ethereum. And we have it available now. Not, like, many months from now. We have it available now. And it was true. You could do everything technically that you wanted to do in Ethereum on Counterparty as of 2014. What was the difference? Ethereum had a lot more marketing dollars, and they were able to, you know, like, just pump the heck out of it because they raised 30,000 Bitcoin.
I tell you what was quite powerful in their thing as well. Was it the Ethereum Alliance or Association?
Well, Ethereum Foundation. And then later they did the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance.
Yeah, and so many companies joined that. It just looked, to an outsider, it's like, wow, that looks powerful.
Yeah, and part of that was because, believe it or not, they started running out of money. And they went out and got more VC funding. And those VCs, you know, like, once you get VC funding, you can get stuff like that, endorsements from companies that don't know what the hell is going on or are sold on the white paper or something like that.
Do you think an exploration into blockchains has been useful to prove certain things? Like, has it been helpful for Bitcoin that all these other projects have happened or some projects have happened that proved that Bitcoin is the only real use case, and has anything come out of any other projects that have helped Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been, you know, helpful tries of different things and things like that. And, you know, like, we find out, okay, you make things too complicated. Like, nobody really uses the term completeness of Ethereum, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can write ERC-20 tokens, ERC-721, without any Turing completeness. It doesn't require any loops or anything like that. But that's one of their big things about Ethereum is, oh, we have Turing complete smart contracts. Well, it's not really useful. Nobody's using it, but that's their marketing spin on it. And to this day, like, I've talked to people and I'm like, yeah, why do you like Ethereum? Oh, they have smart contracts. You know, Bitcoin has smart contracts and has from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they're like, Bitcoin has smart contracts? What? Like, the marketing has penetrated so deeply that they have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in places like Asia where, you know, the marketing is all it is. And that's the only thing that they evaluate.
Well, then we can get to the root of why this conversation is important, because most people aren't Jimmy Song. They mm-hmm. don't code blockchains. They don't understand security. Most of them, and this is what a lot of the fucking morons who get angry at me about when I'm trying to say to them, is that most people, they want to press a button mm-hmm. on Coinbase or Kraken that says buy Bitcoin, and then want to like put it somewhere and the number go up. Okay, mm-hmm. like there will be a lot of people who will get into the economics and the tech, but the majority of people just don't have time. Therefore, I'm compassionate to people who, when they first hear about cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. end up investing, because I did the same. And I didn't mm-hmm. do it out of anything other than I thought, oh, wow, a bunch of new companies are going to be built on this new kind of database design, and that sounds really cool. And then over time, I realized, but most people aren't. So this is why we need to do the show. You mentioned earlier, said most people don't understand what's going on underneath. So what is going on underneath?
Yeah, vast majority of them. Well, at a high level,
yeah.
to speak to, I guess, the people that you're talking about, really the big difference is centralized versus decentralized.
Okay.
And all of these altcoins are centralized. And like, people talk about decentralization as if it's something that you can magically conjure up. It's actually extremely rare.
Mm-hmm.
And to my knowledge, Bitcoin is the only one that's achieved it.
Like, there's on a blockchain.
In any sort of digital realm.
BitTorrent.
Mm-hmm.
Could you argue BitTorrent's done a good job of
being a decentralized protocol or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, like, they struggled to shut down Pirate Bay, right? People mm-hmm. still use torrents.
Yeah, yeah. And so the way torrents work is you can do, and you know, Git's kind of similar in the in the sense that you can go and get all of the source code from one or the other or whatever. That's not the sort of like technical decentralization I'm talking about.
Okay.
The thing that I'm talking about is, you know, Ethereum Foundation controls Ethereum, right? Like Vitalik uh-huh. Buterin can say, okay, I want this feature and it'll get done. But that's not very different than US dollars or the euro or the British pound or whatever.
Okay, not technical decentralization. You're talking about centralized management control decision making.
Yeah, or a single point of failure where they can do choke it, right? Like Ripple.
Yeah.
Like they recently said that they have, there's like $400 million that may have been like drug deals or something like that. Now, if the U.S. government wanted to, like, and if there was a DA that was ambitious enough, they can go and say, "Okay, Ripple, you're going to give us all your records, or we're going to start regulating, otherwise we're going to prosecute you or something like that." And they could go in there and make it so that, okay, well, that guy's a drug dealer, freeze his Ripple account, and take all of the money and give it to us. Like, that's the sort of thing I'm talking about.
What about like commit access and mm-hmm. access to the GitHub repository? As I'm aware, is mm-hmm. is it like five people?
Yeah. So that's for the Bitcoin Core software, right?
Yeah. And there are other software implementations, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. But Bitcoin Core's the primary one. What is it? 90%, 95%? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But so is there a fair slight argument there that is something that needs looking at?
Well, so the thing is, like, the maintainers let merge in the code. The mm-hmm. the actual work is done by everybody else, okay. right? Like, so, you know, I've contributed before, and basically what you do is you put in something called a pull request, you know, and you get reviewers to review it, and that's not an easy process, by the way. Like, getting your code reviewed, it's not like working at some enterprise, you know, software company or something like that, where like nobody really looks at it. Mm-hmm. They really look at it, and they comment on every line of code that where you might have made a mistake or whatever. And if it's like consensus critical, you get like 9 or 10 people doing that. And you can imagine it's a lot of scrutiny over this stuff. And remember, like, whatever code that gets produced, right, the mm-hmm. software that ends up, you don't have to run it.
Yeah, no,
whatever additions that they put in, you don't have to do anything. But, that Bitcoin doesn't force you to do that.
So even if like the FBI did a coordinated takedown and arrested the group of people with commit access and stuck mm-hmm. them in a room and said, basically close us down or mm-hmm. you're not getting out of jail, that doesn't matter, because even if they close it down, someone can just spin up a new Bitcoin protocol.
Yeah, or a new GitHub repository. Right, okay. And if they seize GitHub, they can go host Git on their own or whatever.
Right, okay.
And many people have like forks of Bitcoin, right? Like Luke has one called Knots.
Yeah, I've got that.
Yeah, and there's a... I think Jonas Schnelli used to have like an address index version, which he doesn't keep up anymore. But there's a lot of different, like, I mean, people at Purse are using Bcoin, and I think the LND guys use like BTCD, and you know, LibBitcoin is used, I think, at Abra and stuff. I mean, like,
right? Okay, so it's different.
Lot.
It's different.
Yeah.
Okay, so as far as I see it, then in my like simple world, mm-hmm. is that if you want to build a service with a database, SQL is great. It mm-hmm. works great. Yeah, okay. But if you want to build a database which can't be switched off because it's decentralized, the blockchain is the database you use. That's what it's designed for a decentralized database.
Yeah, it's a very expensive and slow database whose main feature is that it's decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
And you would not use it for anything that's already centralized. Because, I mean, like, I don't know. It depends on what people mean, right? Like
Uber on the blockchain.
Yeah. So, most of that stuff doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, of course.
And I've written many articles on that particular score as well. But yeah, it's back to, like, altcoins and their sort of value prop. They're trying to be decentralized and centralized at the same time. And they're kind of forced into a centralization in many ways, because otherwise it wouldn't do anything. And especially the marketing, and that is largely centralized. Like you look at, you know, something like, you know, Ethereum or whatever, and or Tron or Cardano or whatever. You have to have a foundation that's, you know, doing all of the marketing. Otherwise, nobody would buy it. And that's kind of the sad reality.
Justin Sun's face on the Lyftic consensus. Fucking bullshit. So they've got to keep pumping it and keep pushing it.
Uh-huh.
The problem they have is they're not decentralized and nobody's using it.
Yeah, and those are the main problems. And, you know, I do sympathize with your listeners that are just sort of wanting to click buy on the Bitcoin logo and then watch the number go up, and they're like, well, these other numbers are going up. Maybe they're just as good stores of value. And I kind of blame this on fiat, is that there really aren't very good places to store value, right? Like you got maybe stock, you got maybe real estate, maybe gold, although gold's like heavily manipulated, so it's very hard to do that with. But because those have all high friction and they're not very easy to get access to, and they require a lot of research. If you ever tried to buy a stock or a real estate, I mean, there's a lot of research that you have to do and a lot of time that takes you to do it. Really what people are looking for is a good store of value where they can just click a button and say, okay, I'm going to get the same returns as everybody else that's owning Bitcoin, instead of, you know, that corner house over there is worth less than the one that's in the middle of the street because there's less traffic around it or whatever. Or this stock is worth more because they were in acquisition talks or whatever. And it's Bitcoin is way more fair than any of these other stores of value, and that's what they're really seeking. The thing that they don't realize is that once you go into altcoin land, you're going back to that all of that friction. And the thing is, they're not doing the necessary research that's required of like stocks or whatever. I made an analogy a while ago about how, you know, investing in like sort of random altcoins without reading the code underneath is like diversifying into pink sheet stocks without knowing what the heck they do. And that's essentially what people have fallen for, is they're diversifying into pink sheet stocks. And that's kind of a sad reality.
Well, it's time preference, right?
Yeah.
Because, but Jimmy, I'd never heard of the term store of value before Bitcoin. I hadn't heard of a lot of fucking terms, to be honest. You could do like a dictionary on them, but I knew as gold, as an investment that people tended to hold for a long time, but I'd never gone through the process. I was talking to Tura about this yesterday and Bitstein, saying, you know, I never really considered the concept of money, what it actually really meant, until I was 39 years old, right? Mm-hmm. 41 now. 2 years ago, I started to question it. Before, it was like, I get paid, it goes in my bank account, I spend it. Yeah. I didn't even know inflation was a kind of like hidden tax on my money. Just never thought about it. I was like, oh, that's part of the economy, and we're meant to have inflation. It's good, right? So all these things are new concepts. I think a lot of people don't realize they want a store of value because they've got the time preference problem. They want a quick return. They want to make some money quick and buy a new car or have a holiday or some bullshit. But I think they do, and so that's why they're investing. And then what happens, something like Mr. Hoddle will say, well, they get wrecked, and then they go to Bitcoin.
Yeah, and that's been the process. Like, There's a temptation to get better returns than you're getting on Bitcoin. And that's what usually tempts people into altcoins or whatever. But as this bear market has shown, you're going to get wrecked much harder on an altcoin because, one, it doesn't have the liquidity that Bitcoin has. And two, it doesn't have the value prop or usage. And it's a much worse store of value. And you're going to have sketchy things happen, like, you know, an inflation bug and, you know, Zcash or whatever. Or, you know, I think Zuko is now asking for like a bigger dev subsidy because the Zcash price is so down or whatever. That should be called the dev tax, by the way. But that sort of thing is at the center of all of these altcoins.
What's the wrong incentive model?
Yeah, well, they essentially have governance. And the hilarity of all this is people have been talking about Bitcoin governance, and I say there is no governance because it's decentralized. It's not supposed to have it. The whole idea of governance is government, right? Some central place where decisions can be made. And that's fine if you're centralized. Decentralized concept doesn't make sense at all.
Next up, I talked to Jimmy more about altcoin valuations, but before that, I do have a message from my amazing sponsors. So first up, we have the mighty Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. And I've been talking about this recently, about why Kraken is the best and consistently rated the number one exchange. You know, we've covered security. And if you haven't listened to my show with their chief security officer, Nick Pococo, definitely go and check that out. It's a really, really cool show. But they absolutely kill it on security. There is no way any filthy hacker is going to get to your Bitcoin with Kraken. And if you're an advanced trader, they have the best account management service you can ask for. And on top of that, they have an absolutely unrivaled set of trading products. They've got Kraken.com, which is the best place to buy, sell, and trade digital currencies. They've got margin trading with up to 5x leverage. They've got futures. They've got indices. They've got the Kraken OTC desk for large trades with private and personalized services. They've got CryptoWatch, where you can trade on multiple exchanges from a single platform. And they've just released Kraken Pro, a beautiful mobile-first app so you can trade Kraken wherever you want. They have absolutely crushed it in 2019 as well. They kill security, they kill it on products, and they've now got this badass mobile app. If you want to find out more, head over to Kraken.com, which is Kraken.com, or download the app, which is available for the iPhone and Android. Just search for Kraken Pro, which is Kraken Pro. All right, and next up we have BlockFi. Yes, the amazing BlockFi. And next week, while I'm out in South America, I'm going to be catching up with Zach and Flory. Zach said we're going to get a green tea. We're going to sit down, talk about what's coming in 2020, which is very exciting. But they are the future of Bitcoin and financial services. They are the leader in the space. And did you listen to my show earlier this week with Tudor Mista? I think that show, more than anything, sets apart why companies like BlockFi are so important for the future of Bitcoin by bringing financial services to the space. So if you need a crypto loan, if you want to get yourself a Cybertruck, you want to get a flamethrower, or you want to take a trip to the moon, or if you've just got to pay the man, if the taxes come in, then BlockFi have got you covered. Also, if you want to earn interest on your Bitcoin, Ether, or GUSD, then BlockFi have had so many cool announcements with this product recently. I am a customer, by the way. I love it. I love getting my interest every month. But they have dropped all minimum deposits. They've removed the early withdrawal penalty, and you can choose to receive interest payments in the currency of your choice. As I said, I'm a customer. I love it. I love every month checking in my balance and seeing my interest. It's very, very cool. If you're interested in checking BlockFi out, I do recommend you do your own research. Then head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. I had Zuko on a long time ago, like episode 50 or something. I think my first question to him was, or definitely early on, is Zcoin a company? It kind of is. Well, it's that electric, what's it called, company?
Electric something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it kind of is a company. It's a company.
Yeah.
There's no other way of looking at it. It's a company. And the fact that it's a company is the reason I think they went on Coinbase without shielded addresses, which then is like, well, what's the fucking point of this? okay, so like, one thing you can help me with, let's spend a little bit of time on this, because I don't understand DAI technically. Uh-huh. Like, I listened to Laura Shin's double show, and I was like, okay, kind of interesting. And I met Rune, actually, out in Boston. It seems like a smart guy. Mm-hmm. He's interesting. And I'm not totally against the idea of stable coins, in that we have volatility with Bitcoin, and I don't really want to spend it. But if there's an easy way of buying and transferring a stable coin from one country to another, and it was better than PayPal or something else, I'm not opposed to that. And if it's a way of trading in and out of Bitcoin, again, I'm not opposed to stable coins. But DAI, the guys from the Ethereum guys, that Ryan Adams, fucking idiot, and what's the other one? They keep coming at me, and they're like, oh, the story, there's this guy in Argentina, and he put his peso into DAI, and now he's, like, saved his money because of inflation. And it's like, it's a very fair story. And in the short term, if you can do that, cool, right? If you can put your local Argentinian peso into DAI, and then you can release it over time, and you are protecting your value, I'm like, I find that hard to argue with as a process for an individual.
Okay, well,
but,
so, so here's the big thing about it. Is DAI is what you would call a synthetic peg to the dollar. Synthetic. So something like Tether is supposedly backed. I don't know the details or whatever, but you know they have some bank account somewhere, and that's definitely centralized. But you put in a dollar, you get a dollar, right? And that's the whole idea. The thing with the DAI, and I think Basis tried to do something like this, but they gave all their money back to the investors because they couldn't figure out a regulatory way to do it. But something like DAI, I think Steemit Dollars did something similar. I mean, this is not a new concept at all. Like, I think BitShares before that tried to do it. I think Dan Larimer, for whatever reason, is big into this stuff.
Well, the chances are high because he's created like 73,000 blockchains.
Yeah. So the idea is you have a reserve. So it works almost exactly like a central bank. You have a reserve. So the way central banks work, if you're the central bank of Indonesia or something, what you want to do as a central bank is keep your currency pretty stable with respect to the dollar. If it gets too high, if the dollar costs too little, then you're not going to be able to export. And all of the investment that's coming into your country will like basically go kaput. If it's too low, then you're inducing inflation in your economy and you're not going to be able to import anything. So it's very important for every central bank to keep it within a certain range. And how they do that is they have a reserve of U.S. dollars or treasuries or whatever. And whenever their currency gets too high, they print more of their own currency. And whenever it gets too low, they sell some of the dollars for their own to pump up their currency. That's essentially how most of these, synthetic pegs work. And with MakerDAI, DAO or whatever, they have a bunch of their coins on exchanges, and they trade against it, right? So if it gets too high, they sell. If it gets too low, they buy. That's it.
Okay.
Now, the problem with a central bank doing something like that is that eventually there's a crazy enough event where you don't have a reserve anymore, and you break the peg, right? George Soros famously did this with the British pound, I think in the 80s or something like that. And essentially, he broke the Bank of England and made a ton of money doing it. When people can trade against your desire to keep it in a peg, that can be some serious bad news, especially if your currency is liquid. Now, DAI's not that liquid, but if it gets more popular, I fully expect something like that to happen. Something that's fully backed, I think, is a lot better. And like the Argentinian guy story that you talked about, I mean, he could have just done the same thing, just buying pesos for the dollar, and would have been protected in exactly the same way.
Well, didn't they have a block on buying dollars?
What's that?
Didn't they?
I mean, but you can still buy on the black market and so on.
But maybe it's at a premium. I'm trying to be objective here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be objective and say, if I'm there,
mm-hmm.
let's get away from the Bitcoin maximalism versus everything else is shit argument. Mm-hmm. If I'm sat in Argentina, I'm my money is like losing value, mm-hmm. and someone goes, I buy the story. Mm-hmm. What I don't know is the risk. What is the risk that he wakes up and his DAI is worth fuck all? And how does that happen?
Yeah. So again, if it's like a central bank,
yeah.
it's gradually, then suddenly, right? And these events happen quite often, is where, you know, a central bank just runs out of reserve and then it's hyperinflation almost immediately. And it gets kind of crazy like that. But
how does DAI run out of reserve?
There's only a fixed amount
yeah.
to do that. And they have a reserve of, I think it's Ethereum or whatever, but whichever one, they can always print more of the DAI, I think. So whichever side is not there under their control, that's the one that runs out, then they're doomed.
And you think the risk is like if Ethereum dropped under $100, that becomes significant risk?
Well, I think it becomes significant in the sense that a lot of the people that have taken out loans, right now, like, the vast majority of people that are using DAI are using it because they don't want to get out of their Ethereum position, but they need to pay their bills in dollars. So what they do is they have something like 1.5-to-1 loan to value or something like that. So they'll put in some amount of Ethereum into like a smart contract. And so just to make the numbers round, they have to put in something like $150 worth of Ethereum to get $100 in a loan. And then they can pay their rent or whatever. It drops below a certain amount. Well, that Ethereum that's locked up, if it goes below the 1.5 ratio or whatever, and usually they'll lock up more than that, so like $200 worth of Ethereum.
Mm-hmm.
It goes below 150, they get liquidated unless they put more into it.
Okay, so a market crash is super risky.
Oh, hugely.
Okay.
But they're all basically gambling. I mean, there might be good reasons to do so. The argument that I've heard is if you're an Ethereum miner, then this is a good way to hedge the risk of, you know, complete collapse or something like that. But it just gives you a little bit of a runway until, you know, it falls too much, then you're going to capitulate and you're going to get completely wrecked. It's kind of like
right, okay.
being leveraged on BitMEX or something like that.
So I got the heat of the ETH boys the other day because I was like, I was just like, DAI isn't for the common man. Like, mm-hmm. it's just too complicated. People aren't going to do anything they don't understand. And the comeback was, well, people don't understand how like fiat money works. I'm like, yeah, but like, despite it being shit, you kind of understand in your head how it works. Like, you've got a certain trust in the system in that you get paid and you know you can go into a shop and spend it,
mm-hmm.
right? You're like, you grow up with it. You're born understanding that it just exists.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we as Bitcoiners don't trust fiat because it's bullshit, but mm-hmm. we still trust the processed works of getting paid and using our card most of the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem with DAI, I was like, I don't understand it. Like, I fundamentally don't understand it. It's like a whole new system, and I don't think other people will understand it. And I said, it just seems like a ETH toy. A toy for guys who got rich on, well, guys and girls. Guys and girls who got rich on ETH, right? And then somebody said, well, no, because that's now. But it's going to become multi-collateral. So you'll be able to raise DAI with your house. And I was like, okay, I understand the point. Who checks I own the house? What happens if I don't pay off my loan? Who's going to come and take my house from me?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, well, you know, there'll be centralized services built on top to do this. I was like, oh, so like a bank.
Yeah, this is the problem with any sort of smart contract that tries to take in collateral from the real world, is that you need some enforcement mechanism, mm-hmm. and you need to obey the laws of the jurisdiction. And there's no way to guarantee, like, I can say I own the house. How are you going to check it? Who's going to check it? Is the house on the DAI, MakerDAO blockchain or whatever actually represented? And if somebody steals that token somehow, or if it, who's going to go to the jurisdiction and say, I own this house, evict this guy? Like, this is what's called the Oracle problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not solvable. It's a metaphysical problem. Yeah. You have some token on the blockchain that represents something in the real world. You can't forcefully make them linked.
And these are over-collateralized loans, whereas mm-hmm. the bank don't force over-collateralization of your loans from your house. Well, not in the UK generally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I wanted to go and borrow against my house, I can usually, I don't have to over-collateralize.
Mm.
And so it's to me seems like they've built a more complicated version of something that already exists and yeah. works.
Right now, DAI is used basically by people that don't want to sell their Ethereum,
mm-hmm.
right? And they want to make it multi-collateral, and the next targets are probably like Bitcoin and other altcoins or whatever. And basically say, okay, well, you can get a loan in dollars through, you know, DAI or whatever, and basically pay off whatever. But, you know, as long as it stays like this, then you get all of the upside of that coin while being able to pay off your debt or whatever bills you have. You're essentially, like, basically entering into a debt contract. And I don't recommend that.
I am not putting my Bitcoin on DAI.
No, and that's like just asking for trouble, and you know, you have one black swan event, everyone gets just completely wiped.
Why do you think it is the ETH boys? I keep saying boys, but because mm-hmm. there's mainly blokes I talk to. But mm-hmm. why do you think it's the ethers haven't given up on Ethereum? Why they're so adamant it's going to be a success and it's this amazing thing? Because everyone I speak to, like you talk to Udi, is like, mm-hmm. this is dumb. Mm-hmm. Eric Wall, he followed his. Mm-hmm. Did you follow his thing where he tried to sync a full node for Ethereum?
I think so.
Like, took him ages, and he uh-huh. just said it's a nightmare. Somebody also told me this, and tell me if this is true or not. I know other people lose their shit if it's not, but somebody said there's only 10 full nodes, Ethereum nodes.
Well, I mean, that we know of, maybe? I mean, yeah. Vast majority of people are using, what's that thing that Consensus does?
Infura.
Yeah, everyone uses basically Infura.
They just bought Infura, didn't they?
I mean, I know they're losing a crap ton of money just from AWS bills or whatever.
I'm pretty sure Consensus bought Infura. But if everyone's running it through Infura
mm-hmm.
and you turn off the Infura plug,
then nothing works, yeah.
It's dead.
And or if you can go and corrupt Infura to do to say whatever you wanted to say and say, you know, I have a million ETH in this account when it really has like zero. Yeah, you can probably spend the hell out of it and, you know, get all these assets or whatever. I mean, this is why I call Ethereum completely centralized, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, you compromise Infura or Ethereum Foundation or Vitalik or, like, eight different things, and you can probably abuse the hell out of it. And there's so many ways it could get regulated. I mean, it's crazy to me that people think that this is something great. But as far as why a lot of people are still so enthusiastic about it, I read a story of this woman that has been doing Amway for like 40 years, right? Hasn't made any money the whole time. and she's still kind of forced to believe in it. And I kind of see it like it's like Stockholm syndrome or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If like your identity is in Ethereum, well, like if you spent like the last 3 years building on it and you've realized like it's a cognitively it's very difficult to come to that point, right? And this is why a lot of people can't quit smoking or drinking or whatever. It's a part of your identity. Well, I must be getting something out of this, or the future of this is much better than I think in order to you know, just sort of, it's self-deception, really.
Well, this was covered in the that OneCoin podcast. Mm-hmm. I covered it with Jamie. So even at the point where it was so clear it was a scam, mm-hmm. like so obviously clear, people were defending it.
Yeah.
And it was for a couple of reasons. Firstly, they were part of groups where they were told, no, mm-hmm. ignore those people because they're liars and they're jealous and they're, mm-hmm. you know, they're just haters. They already invested, so they got money in, so they're financially invested. But essentially, he also spoke to this person who's like a psychologist, and it's like these things become cult-like, mm-hmm. and you cannot separate yourself from them. It's really, people really, like you say, it's like smoking, it's like an addiction. Mm-hmm. But you're clear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's clear as pie to you, Ethereum is a dumb idea, it's mm-hmm. a poor investment, it can't scale, it can't work, and it isn't decentralized.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. There's nothing in there.
And the reason why they've been successful is largely marketing, which, I mean, great, they've done a very good job in that regard, but technically, I don't think it has much merit. And as far as their value prop, most of it is just people playing with stuff that doesn't matter or has no utility outside the people that already hold Ethereum. So it's kind of crazy to me. But this phenomenon of sort of being, you know, loyal to it despite all evidence is, you know, like very clear in BCH and BSV and pretty much every altcoin. Like, you have defenders that are invested in it, and it's very hard to convince someone that what their baby is ugly. That's basically what we're trying to convince people of. But even in the, you know, stock market and stuff like that, the whole Theranos thing. I mean, Tim Draper was defending that woman for forever. And like going back to stuff like 2X, right? Like, there are still people that are defending the fact that they thought 2X was a good idea, even though it's very clear it wasn't. And it's crazy to me how much people, like, hold on to those beliefs, like, mm-hmm. as an outsider. But, I mean, then again, like, we're all human. There's a part of us that wants to believe, but this is where sort of your ability to separate your ego from, like, sort of objective fact and truth is a very important skill, or part of life. Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. Look, I get it. I mean, I remember when I was done with altcoins, mm-hmm. you know, I defended them mm-hmm. and defended my right to do interviews and all that stuff. And they got to the end and it was such a weight off my shoulders mm-hmm. when I dumped everything. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's happened since then is my Bitcoin's gone up because I don't selling any, I'm uh-huh. not selling any, and I add to it, right? Mm-hmm. And suddenly, I actually don't even check the price that much often. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're a regular price checker, but
I do.
I see it when it's on Twitter, but I don't really check it anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm tending to, I don't know, just look a bit longer. But all right, so we can conclude altcoins are a risky to stupid investment, most likely a scam. If they're not a direct scam, the people have realized that it's not going to work, and mm-hmm. they're scamming you by continuing on this nonsense. And if anyone gets angry with me, I'll just say, talk to Jimmy. Jimmy told me to say it because I don't fucking know.
I've written lots of articles on this. I mean, it's the thing is, like, people get so offended when you tell them, okay, like, you know, you might be in a scam or whatever. And it's kind of like, you know, if you're giving somebody feedback about anything, if you tell them they're not doing something right, it takes a mature person to take that feedback and say, thank you. Like, I understand that.
Honestly, you know what we never get? We never get somebody. Mm-hmm. We never, ever, I've talked about this a few times, have somebody turn around and go, do you know what? This idea is bullshit. We were wrong. Sorry. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. We're gonna stop the blockchain. It's bollocks. We're sorry. I know you lost some money. Nobody's ever done that.
Yeah, and they can't, right? Because the liability and lawsuits that would come, like, almost immediately would be insane. I mean, Basis sort of did that, right? They mm-hmm. they tried to do the algorithmic peg or whatever, and they realized, you know, let's just give everybody back their money and, you know, let's call it a day. And good on them for doing that. That takes a lot of integrity and maturity to do. But for the vast majority of people, they've more or less sold their souls for that. And, you know, you can't get it back. And this is the one thing that they can cling to. I sold all of this and my credibility and all my money and all this other stuff for this coin. If it doesn't succeed, then, you know, I'm worthless or something like that. And honestly, I think this is how people like Calvin Ayer and Roger Ver, like, are thinking. It's they have to make it succeed, and they think they're the drivers to make it that way. And this is what drives a lot of the people in Ethereum too. But
the amount of ego wrapped up in that.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, it's sometimes that can be good because if you're at a startup and you can pivot and try different things and make it work. And I imagine that's a large reason why so many of them come out of some of these things and actually end up succeeding. But I mean, these are like kind of hopeless projects. Mm-hmm. And it's that woman that's been doing Amway for 40 years still kind of gung-ho about it, you know, like despite not having made money and having sunk lots and lots of money into Amway. That's kind of the situation we're in. And I don't know, like I'm hoping these people wake up, but I honestly don't know if they have that in them.
Well, I know the response. I know what will happen when this will go out. It won't really convince that many people. One or two might go, but like it will reinforce some beliefs. And if some people are on the edge, mm-hmm. it might drive them to research a bit more. Mm-hmm. Also, I think, Jimmy, there are some people out there who probably know, but they still think the value will go up because it can do. Uh-huh. And they'll make some money and then they'll get out. They're like, oh, once it gets back to there, I'll get out.
Yeah, and that's sort of like the loss aversion, right? Mm. And that's a part of human psychology. You wanna at least not lose money so then you can like go dump on it afterwards.
Yeah.
And you know, I can fully admit I have the same thing, right? Like I whenever I make an investment, there's definitely loss aversion, and at least according to Tone, this is what causes a lot of the technical patterns that show up in like charts and so on. But there is a loss aversion. But the thing is, like, what if you're wrong? What if it never comes back? I mean, like, then you might get deeper in this hole. Is it really worth losing your soul, right? Like, in a sense, you're kind of going to be more and more twisted the longer you hold on. And this is something that I realized about a lot of these altcoins and a lot of investments in general, is that you end up defending any investment that you make, not because of the facts, but because you own it, right? It's kind of like, again, like somebody calling your baby ugly. Well, you know, if it wasn't your baby, then you might be more objective about it. But there's a desire to defend that which you have just because you have it. And that's a really sad situation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how you get – well, actually, how did you quit smoking? Like how did it what made you decide to quit smoking?
I wouldn't say I fully quit. I still relapse because I really like smoking. I love a cigarette. But the reason I know I've got to is I'm getting older,
uh-huh.
and I'm more conscious of my mortality,
uh-huh.
you know, and I just... But I tell you, actually, one of the biggest things, I really fucking hate the fact something owns me.
Oh,
like, I own my life.
Yeah.
I can do what the fuck I want, when I want, wherever I want. But nicotine owns me. Like when I'm full on smoking, say I've got my Juul and it runs out of battery, I start to lose my shit. And I'm like, where can I charge this?
Yeah.
Or if I haven't got any pods. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that means that owns me.
Yeah.
Everything else I can control. Mm-hmm. Like I could do with losing some weight, and I've done it before if I want to. It doesn't control me. Food doesn't control me. Nicotine, it's like, I fucking need that.
See,
shit.
That's it. That's it right there. Because the altcoins own these people.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Yeah, and they don't realize it. They're like, wait, all my opinions, all the defending that I'm doing, all the tweets that I make, all of this. And, you know, I'm sure somebody's going to say, Jimmy, same thing's happening for you with Bitcoin. Yeah, I don't know. That's hard for me to judge because I do own Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can say is that I've owned other altcoins in the past. I don't own them anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, That's qualitatively different than how I look at Bitcoin.
Well, hopefully it'll help some people. Stop using blockchains for your bullshit project. Just have an SQL database and you'll be fine. All right, well, listen, look, before we finish up, how's the book done?
Little Bitcoin Book's doing very well. We have it translated to Spanish. Portuguese will be coming out pretty soon. We're working on Mandarin, Dutch, I think French, possibly German, Russian, Arabic, Turkish. We're working on a lot of them.
Yeah, and feedback's been amazing.
We can't wait until the bull market, because then I'm sure we'd sell even more. But we've sold in the 5,000 range.
Nice.
in the first couple of months. So I mean that's like very encouraging to me, and it tells you that there's a a hunger for this kind of material that's very accessible.
And what about your book? Because before that, you did a book.
Yeah, Programming Bitcoin. It's doing well. I get a check from O'Reilly every month, so nice. That's always nice. But yeah, I know that a lot of people at like the Chaincode Labs residency, like it was like a prerequisite before they went in. So very happy about that. There's a lot of people that have told me that they learned a lot about Bitcoin or now understand things a lot more fully. So that's very gratifying because that's why I wrote the book and all this other stuff is to educate people and get people in a position where they learn Bitcoin more because Bitcoin isn't Ethereum, right? We don't trust like 10 people to make all of the decisions. Like the more decentralized the knowledge is, the more people understand what's going on underneath. And, you know, I mean, not to say that everyone has to know the subtleties of consensus rules and C++ or whatever, but being able to at least comprehend a little better and leveling up yourself, that's very important to me because that's what keeps Bitcoin decentralized. And, you know, should like you in the dystopian scenario that you outlined earlier where all these, you know, programmers get arrested, we can continue that because we have a bunch of other people that understand that the knowledge is out there and information wants to be.
All right, and what's coming up next? I know you'll always have something. Can you tell me anything? Any secrets?
I'm working on a new class. I've taught the programming blockchain class for a while now. Working on a new class, programming wallet. So it'll be on top of that. And hopefully that'll become like a follow-up to the book Programming Bitcoin as a way to understand like sort of wallets and all the things that you need to know technically in order to program one. I'm going to be in a bunch of different places over the next few months. I'm going to be at techfin.asia. It's in Seoul, Korea, early December. Then a week after that, I'm going to be at La BitConf.
I will see you there.
Yeah, that's going to be in Uruguay.
I've not been. Have you been?
I haven't. No. I've been to South America once, and that was last year. So
I haven't.
I can't wait for the meet, man. That's going to be amazing.
Well, I think I'm going to go via Argentina.
Uh-huh.
Because I want to see Buenos Aires. Uh-huh. And someone's invited me to El Salvador, which slightly scares the shit out of me. But I can't fucking wait.
And South American people are just so friendly.
Yeah.
And they're very warm. And, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm making a stereotype or whatever. Maybe. At least when I went to Sao Paulo last year, I had a really good time. So I wanted to make this one. In February, I'm going to be at Advancing Bitcoin. That's in London.
MCing that.
Yeah, you're going to MC that. So that'll be fun. One. And I'm going to be at Tones Conference. That's unconfiscatable in Las Vegas.
I meant to be at that, but it kind of clashes with my daughter's birthday.
Okay.
So I might be able to come to the first day, but like a month.
Why don't you just bring your daughter, man?
To Vegas for her birthday. I mean, she would love that, but she's got school, man. I don't think a demonic mother would love that anyway.
Yeah. So those are the next four trips that I have.
I'm gonna see a bunch of you then.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to write more books and stuff. I'm still trying to figure out what book to write. I think maybe something saying blockchain fraud or something like that.
I think you need to do a kid's book.
A kid's book?
I think you've got like hundreds of children. you could write a book for them about Bitcoin and how it works.
Bitcoin Money actually does a pretty good job.
Is that the Bitcoin Rabbi's book?
Yeah, that's good. I like that one and my kids like it too.
Do you ever see that picture I've got? I've got this fucking brilliant picture where I'm reading that and my daughter's next to me reading Mastering Bitcoin.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you should make it my book, but yeah.
Well,
I like Mastering Bitcoin too, but
All right, well, wicked. Look, Lowe's coming up. Excellent. I'm going to see a bunch of you. It means we're going to eat some good food.
Yeah, we're going to go to lunch after
this,
right?
Yeah, now, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to go to Cooper's or something?
You tell me. I don't know, man.
It's
your town.
Yeah, plenty of good barbecue over here. Right. I think Parker said he wanted to go too, so we'll see.
Okay, well, listen, tell people how they can find you, buy your shit, and follow you.
All right, so I am on Twitter, Medium, and GitHub as Jimmy Song, and you can go and follow me there, and I talk about lots of stuff. I also have a two-day seminar, Programming Blockchain. You can go check that on programmingbitcoin.com. It has links to my books as well, including Programming Bitcoin and The Little Bitcoin Book. You can buy the Spanish version on Amazon right now, El Pequeño Libro de Bitcoin. So you're going to want to go search that if you have Spanish relatives or something. I really need to work on how to market that, by the way. I'd like your advice on that.
Awful. I gotcha. Let's talk about it.
And I have... I talked about my blog. I talked about that. I have a show on YouTube, Off Chain with Jimmy Song, mm-hmm. that you can subscribe to as well.
You can have that as a podcast. I have that as a podcast.
Yeah. So, yeah. I usually just like talk for 40 minutes, but I don't know. Maybe people find it interesting. That's about it.
All right, man. Yeah. Well, listen. Thanks for coming on. And Joe Lubin, if you're listening, stop being a pussy. Take the bet. We've been waiting way too long for this. Just take the fucking bet. Great to see you, man. Let's go and eat.
All right.
Okay, so what did you think of that? Was that helpful? Does that strengthen your stance on Bitcoin compared to alts, or do you still have doubts? Do you still believe that some of these altcoins have a future? I do love catching up with Jimmy. I think that's the third time he's been on the show now. And his article on altcoin valuation is really worth a read. So I recommend you go and check that out as well. And if you enjoyed this episode, the last show I did with Jimmy was back in May. We covered some similar topics and it's well worth a listen. I think that's episode 113. We recorded that one out in Oslo. So listen, look, I know this subject splits people to the point of tribal warfare, and I've wrestled with it myself. And while I don't have the technical skills, yes, Pete's not technical. You know, I don't have the technical skills of someone like Jimmy. I have spent the last 2 years with so many different experts who've rationally explained both sides of the argument, from people who believe in altcoins and people who think they're an absolute scam and bullshit. And it became something that was a real issue for the podcast, you know. It was really tough for me because in the end I decided to go Bitcoin only. But I had this problem whereby if I covered altcoins because I believed they had a value prop, and I would have Bitcoiners asking me why I'm giving a platform to scammers. But when I'm Bitcoin only, and if I believe that altcoins are a poor investment, I'll have to do my best to ensure that listeners hear these arguments, but with multi-coiners calling me as a closed-minded maximalist. There really is no middle ground. Like, either you're given a platform to scammers, or you're a closed-minded maximalist. And look, some of you might say, oh, no, you can keep an open mind. You know, Pete used to keep an open mind, but by keeping an open mind, potentially I'm opening the door for more scams. I mean, I was discussing with another scammer last night, an absolute bullshit, obvious scam, and following that, I've had, like, people emailing me and DMing me on Twitter, telling me I'm a child or whatever. So, anyway, I just refer back to what Nassim Taleb said, that if you see fraud and you don't say fraud, then you're a fraud. And for me right now, I'm not going to go as far as say everything's fraud. There are clear frauds in the space, but I also think there's probably misguided projects, and then there's Bitcoin. And, you know, I'm firmly in the Bitcoin side of things. I think it's really important to say to people, look, if you're going to invest in these altcoins, you've got to be aware of the risks. And I do this despite the accusations of trying to please a crowd. I mean, in terms of business, being a Bitcoin-only show means the scope of guests, listeners, and advertisers is a lot smaller. You know, commercially, I would have made a lot more money keeping the show as one that supports multiple coins. But anyway, it isn't. It's a Bitcoin-only show. I believe Jimmy. I'm not as firm. I'm not as hard as him. I don't believe everything that isn't Bitcoin is a scam. I might have said it on Twitter a couple of times, but it's more of a trolling joke. I do, though, think there's a bunch of misguided projects. But look, if someone comes along and creates some successful blockchain-based project and, you know, it has user uptake and it is decentralized, then I'll be the first to put my hands up and say, you know what, I'm sorry, I was wrong. But right now, I do not have that faith. Anyway, sorry, that's a long, rambling exit. I do hope you enjoyed the show. If you do have any feedback, you can hit me up. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Also, as ever, thank you to anyone who supports the show, whatever you do. You know, whether you listen, whether you share, like so many people have been sharing the show on Twitter recently. The show numbers are going crazy. So thank you so much for that. But yeah, if you do want to support the show, if you're a regular listener, you think I want to help Pete out this week, please go to my website. It's whatbitcoindid.com. There is a support section there that will explain everything you can do. All right. As I mentioned, I'm off to South America on Tuesday. I'm off to Uruguay, then Bolivia, and then Argentina. Can't wait to get out there. I've never been to South America before. Hopefully, I will get to meet some of you while I'm on the travels. Anyway, hope you have a great weekend. If you do have any questions, it's hello@whatbitcoindid.com.